the very power of the message that drew us to it in the first place. By the way, this is why millennials, for the most part, are leaving the church. Let's face it. There are churches in our own area and around the country, most evangelical churches, by the way, have sold out. But there are many, many, many churches in this area and around the country, even historic peace churches, even churches that call themselves Mennonite, that preach a gospel of what I call macho Christianity, that likes to flex their muscles, that discriminates against the very people Jesus embraced, and that beat the drums of war. I mean, you know these churches. Let's face it. The vast majority of churches in our day, either through their active participation or through their silence, have relegated themselves to not much more than complicit court churches with court theologies that baptize the status quo and the decisions of the government. It's no longer enough to be well-meaning. Good intentions aren't enough. It's time to act. It's time to speak. It's time to say yes. In our day, each in our own places, in whatever way we can, as our country is once again brandishing its military bluster, it's time to be brave. And friends, I'll say it again. It's time to say yes. There comes a time when silence, King says, is betrayal. So often we hear about speaking truth to power, which assumes that those who want to speak don't have power. I'm here to tell you that if we're honest, most of us don't really want the truth. We want the constant reassurance that what we already believe is the truth. And even more, most Christians are uncomfortable with power. But Jesus not only spoke truth to power, He spoke about power. He challenged the power of worldly powers with an alternative power. A king who rides into Jerusalem on a donkey, only to ascend a cross, a different kind of throne. And His message? Think about it. The power of Rome, the chief priests in the temple, the military guard, the fickle masses, empire and its religious and political and military minions, baloney. He says, you want to see power? Give me a cross. Think about that. Think about that. One man against the power of Rome. You want to see power? Give me a cross and I'll turn it into life abundant. See, the thing that most of us say but don't really believe is there's power and then there's power. King understood this. And who his call came from. Again, from his Riverside speech. Our nation has made peaceful revolution impossible by refusing to give up the privileges and pleasures that come from the immense profits of overseas investments. I'm convinced that if we are to get on the right side of the world revolution, we as a nation must undergo a radical revolution of values. We must shift from being a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered. He goes on. This calling takes me beyond national allegiances. Think about that. This calling takes me beyond national allegiances. It takes me to my commitment to the ministry of Jesus Christ. To me, the relationship of this ministry of Christ to the making of peace is so obvious that I sometimes marvel at those who ask me why I'm speaking out against the war. And by the way, here's my update. Here's the Spath update on King. A nation that likes to call itself exceptional not only measures its power by the number of bombs it drops on another country, but by the number of refugees from that very same country it welcomes to its shores. You'll be hearing about that on Thursday night at our friends at the UEF. If we want to call ourselves exceptional, it's not about bluster. It's not about bombs. It's not about military might. It's about the compassion and moral integrity of our leaders and the policies that they present, not only at home, but around the world. It's this moral clarity that's going to cut through the doubts we have, just like Thomas had. It's this moral clarity that concentrates my thoughts this week after Easter. It's this moral clarity that's going to sustain us when those whose affirmation we so desperately seek now find us too hard to take, or try to defame us or silence us or even worse. I'm calling you to courage because I'm calling me to courage. I'm calling me to courage. We who embrace this alternative Jesus vision, this alternative use of power, we who decide that we cannot not accept the cost of following Him, in other words, we who choose to say yes, we must get used to walking a lonely road. This is going to be the road less traveled. We're going to have to accept life on the margins because that's where we find the people that Jesus loved, the people who need us the most. Even when we're afraid, even when we're doubting, serve anyway, give anyway, sacrifice anyway, love anyway, love yourself into courage. Love yourself into courage. For myself, for myself, friends, this path, I'm just beginning this part of the journey. And so I'm learning as I go, to be honest with you. So what I'm saying is this. Let me wrap it up. What I'm saying is this. We are Thomas. Thomas is us. But according to tradition, Thomas left Jerusalem right after the story ends, and he goes off to India and brings the message of Jesus there, even in spite of his doubting. He loved his way into courage. When sometimes it appears that our faithfulness might not be paying off, at least as the world understands it, in terms of success or size, or when we doubt, or when we're needing proof, just like Thomas, just like on that first Easter, it will be the Easter Jesus who will come to us through shut doors and locked doors, through doubting hearts and needing all kinds of proof minds, and He'll reassure us with the power of believing, even when seeing is difficult. No matter the cost, to say yes. That's what I'm thinking about this week after Easter, friends. That's what's on my heart. Will I say yes? So I'm going to ask you to walk with me. Will you say yes? Will you say yes? So, 50 years ago, in Riverside Church, Martin Luther King Jr. recalls being criticized, questioned about the wisdom of the path he chose. "Why are you speaking out against the war?" he was asked. "Aren't you hurting the cause of your people? Peace and civil rights don't mix." And this is how he replied in this speech. "I increasingly saw the war as an enemy of the poor. We were taking black young men crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Harlem. And their families asked, and rightly so, what about Vietnam?" He goes on. "They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems, to bring about the changes it wanted. And their questions hit home to me," King said. "And I knew I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without first speaking clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government." You can see why this put a target on his back. He goes on. "A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. If America's soul becomes totally poisoned, part of the autopsy must read Vietnam." Well, change a word or two, and he could be speaking about today. The Korean Peninsula, Syria, Afghanistan, ratcheting up the possibilities of violence. Sometimes if we take the time to tune out the noise and really listen, there's a call for us. I don't care if we're big or small, rich or poor. I don't care about any of that. There's a call that's reaching into the heart of this church, and there's a call that's reaching into each one of your hearts today. Perhaps it's coming as a voice from someone else, or perhaps it's a whisper, or perhaps it's something even deeper than sound. But if we listen, we can hear it. And we know in the very deepest places in our hearts that it's the call of Jesus. And we must pay heed to it no matter what. You know, it just seems so clear to me. Yet here's my confession to you this morning. It's not that I don't hear the voice. I hear it. It's that I'm not ready to pay the price. Can you empathize with me, friends? I'm not afraid of the no. I'm more afraid of the yes. What if I say yes? What if this church says yes? What if you say yes? What will it mean for your life, my life? How will it change us? What will it cost us if we say yes? Will you say yes? I mean, will you? Will I? You know, we Christians have a remarkable ability to take the most radical ideas, let's call it the Jesus way, to take the most radical ideas and domesticate them for the sake of entrenched religious or political expediency or concern about